Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Lowe's has the Labor Day deals you need to give your home a new look. Buy one, get one free. Select interior paint via Visa gift card rebate. Then, add the final touch with 2 for $8 on select 2.5 or 3-quart mums. Refresh your home and save big while doing it. Lowe's. We help. You save. Valid through 9/3. Mums offer in-store only. Selection varies by location. While supplies last. More terms and restrictions apply. See Lowe's.com/rebates for details.
Hi, everybody. I'm Ashley Banfield, and this is Drop Dead Serious. Today was day 8 in the Karen Reed trial, and if you thought Jen McCabe's testimony was winding down, think again, because not only was she still on the stand, she was in the hot seat once again, and this time things got uncomfortable. Let's just start from the top. Alan Jackson, Karen Reed's defense attorney, opened this morning up by zeroing in on the moment that everything began, the night of John O'Keefe's death. He asked Jen when she last saw Karen Reed's SUV parked outside of 34 Fairview Road. And her answer? Fuzzy. She said she thinks it was around 12:45 a.m., but she wasn't really paying attention to the time, she said. Not exactly a confident answer, especially from a witness who's been under scrutiny for 2 years. And then things started heating up. Alan Jackson asked Jen what calls she made that morning and what she testified to previously in front of the grand jury. She said she called Karen Reed, Julie Albert, and a man named Tom Beatty. But then Alan Jackson asked Jen why she never mentioned that she called her sister, Nicole, at 5:07 a.m., a call that lasted 38 seconds. You know, why did you never mention that to the grand jury that you called over to 34 Fairview Road well before dawn?
You've been asked about with whom you communicated call there at that call and thereafter, shortly thereafter, within those next few minutes, correct?
Yes.
As a matter of fact, you were asked by Trooper Prince in a formal interview on February 1st, 2022. I know that was a while ago, but in that initial formal interview 3 days after the event, Trooper Prince, the female trooper, asked you who you called or who you communicated with during that important few minutes after you received the first phone call from Kaylee's phone, correct?
I'm not sure of our exact conversation, but she did ask me a number of questions.
Do you remember telling her I spoke with Karen Reed, obviously?
Again, I answered whatever question she asked me. So okay, if she asked, I did speak with Karen Reed that morning, correct?
Okay, Ms. McCabe, my question is, did you tell Trooper Prince 3 days after the fact, I spoke with Karen Reed? Yes or no?
If you have a report, I don't remember the specifics. I met with many, many police officers.
Sure. Ms. McCabe, did that refresh your recollection as to what you told Trooper Prince?
I know what happened, so I just answered
yes or no
questions.
Yes or no? Does that refresh your recollection as to what you told Trooper Prince?
Yes.
Okay. You told Trooper Prince that you had a conversation on Kaylee's phone with Miss Reed, correct?
Yes.
That you also called Julie Albert after you got off the phone with Miss Reed the first time?
Yes.
And then thereafter, at some point, you talked to Tom Beatty, correct?
I never spoke with Tom.
I'm sorry. My mistake. I misspoke. You called Tom Beatty.
Yes, I called Tom Beatty.
Did not get through to Tom Beatty.
I didn't. No one answered. Yes.
Okay. So in both of those statements to Trooper Prince when you were asked about your communications, and at the grand jury, by the way, at the grand jury, when you were asked who you communicated that morning, who you communicated with that morning, you didn't need to see a report, did you? You didn't ask to see a report, like you're doing here.
Well, I'm asking because you're asking specific questions about what I said on a specific day. And depending on who's asking the question, they ask questions in a different manner. So the answer is always going to be the same. If you ask me who I spoke to, I'm always going to tell you I spoke to Ms. Reed and Julie. I called Julie Albert and I called Tom Beatty. The answer is always the same. But the way the question asked and maybe some of the words that I use may be different. And I don't remember on specific days. I've been questioned many times, but the answers are always going to be the same. The wording may be different.
You done? Finish? Is that answer?
Yes, I am.
Okay.
I'm going to allow that, but let's move on.
I'm trying. All right. But you did make another phone call that morning that you left out of both of those statements, didn't you?
I'm not sure.
At 5:07 a.m., you called over to 34 Fairview, didn't you?
If it's in my phone record, then I must have.
It's in your phone records that you're aware of. Well, let me ask it a different way. You're aware that your phone records actually show that at 5:07, you called the 34 Fairview Nicole Albert's phone, correct?
Correct.
It shows also that call lasted 38 seconds. Correct.
I'm not sure what it shows.
You actually spoke to your sister, Nicole, that morning?
I did not speak to my sister, no.
So that 38-second call went to voicemail?
I'm not sure. All I can tell you is I never spoke to my sister, Nicole, that morning prior to waking her up.
If you're Karen Reed, this little detail is important because this makes it a whole lot more strange that the homeowners of 34 Fairview Road, Nicole and Brian Albert, never once stepped outside of that house on the morning that John O'Keefe was found frozen and battered on their front lawn. And it is especially strange after a phone call was at 5:07 a.m. between Jen and her sister, Nicole, a call that lasted 38 seconds. And not only that, this isn't even the first call that Jen McCabe just forgot about in this case. Just ask those federal agents that showed up to Jen's house for an interview. She forgot about calls that she made right before that critical interview, too. Now, this doesn't mean that there's some grand conspiracy, but file that under things that make you go, huh? Like things that might just lead to reasonable doubt. And Alan Jackson pushed Jen McCabe even harder on the issue, asking her again why she never mentioned the call that she made to her sister when she went before the grand jury.
But you do acknowledge that you made a phone call at 5:07 to Julie Albert. I'm sorry, to Nicole Albert, your sister, over at 34 Fairview in those early morning hours, correct?
Yes, I learned after. When I'm first being questioned, it's days after. It was a chaotic morning. I remembered the waterfall, Julie, then Tom Beatty. Calling to my sister wasn't as important in my ingrained in my mind at that point. No.
And then you testified at a grand jury, not hours or days later. Mm-hmm. You testified at a grand jury months later, correct? Mm-hmm.
Correct.
And at that grand jury, you also left out the fact that you contacted your sister, correct?
There's nothing nefarious. I remembered who I called. I didn't go back and look at phone records.
I didn't say it was nefarious. Why would you use the word nefarious?
Because there's nothing about me calling my sister that is nefarious, and I feel like you're insinuating it might be, and it's not.
Did you use that word because it sounds nefarious?
No, I just used the word because I think that's how you're trying to portray something that is nothing.
Or did you use that word because you think that's how it's coming across? That's nefarious.
No, not at all.
The jury also got to hear about Jen McCabe's statements, the ones that were contained in the reports of a former trooper named Michael Proctor. Proctor was the lead investigator in the case, and Jen had denied actually saying some of the things that were in Michael Proctor's report.
There was never a plan for Karen to come
to
my house.
Do you remember exactly what you told him with that regard on that issue?
No, I don't.
Would it refresh your recollection to look at a police report that he drafted on that issue?
Well, those are his words or summary.
That's not my question. I know these are his words. He wrote it. Mm-hmm. My question is, would it refresh your recollection about what you told him to take a look at his report?
I know what happened, and I know what I told him. I don't know what's written in that report.
Yes or no?
I don't need to see the report, no.
Because it would not refresh your recollection to see a report where he indicated that you told him that you directed Ms. Reed to come to your house.
So, you know, not great.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams Labor Day sale and get 35% off paints and stains August 22nd through September 4th. With prices starting at $31.84, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
Then Alan Jackson dived into a series of group chats between Jen, her sister Nicole Albert, her brother-in-law Brian Albert, and Jen's husband Matt. The chats happened on February 1st, 2022. So did a couple of text messages between Jen and her sister Nicole. Those texts were sent the evening after John's body was found, and Karen Reed's defense team put them up on a big screen for the whole courtroom to see. Here's one from 7:54 p.m. Carrie talked to cops and kept simple. Jen's sister Nicole responded back to her, telling Jen to get some rest and that they'll talk soon, to which Jen replied, "Any update?" And Nicole responded, "We'll get more info tomorrow. Don't want to text about it." Alan Jackson kept hammering this theme. Were Jen and her family coordinating their stories? Jen insisted no. But then came the group chat. Again, this is between Jen, her sister Nicole Albert, her brother-in-law Brian Albert, and Jen's husband Matt. And again, the chat happened on February 1st, 2022, just 3 days after John O'Keefe died. Brian Albert writes, "Julie said Channel 4 is in D and E." That's a reference to a pizza sub shop that's owned by Chris Albert, Brian's brother. Then Matt McCabe jumps in with this. "Ask Chris to ask some questions. Tell them the guy never went in the house." Later in the text thread, Matt McCabe says, "Yep, if she pleads out, this'll end. If she doesn't, this'll be an episode." If it's not obvious, the "she" that they're referring to in that group chat is Karen Reed. If you ask Jen McCabe, that chat meant John O'Keefe never made it inside the home at 34 Fairview Road. But if you ask the defense, it sure looked a lot like damage control. Alan Jackson asked Jen if their group chat messages would be, quote, "a textbook example of witnesses colluding with one another about a subject matter that is under investigation."
You never intended, obviously, for any of those texts to become public, correct?
I handed my phone over, so I knew all my texts would be seen.
When you were writing the text, when the group was chatting back and forth or texting back and forth, those were intended to be private texts between and among just the people on the text string, correct?
I just was texting my family. I wasn't thinking anymore of who was going to see it.
You certainly did not expect when you were writing those texts that the defense, Ms. Karen Reed's representatives, would ever get a hold of those texts. That was not in your mind, correct?
Would never have been in my mind, no.
That is a textbook example, what we've just seen, of witnesses colluding with one another about a subject matter that's under investigation, correct?
And move for an instruction.
All right, jurors, disregard that comment completely. Disregard that question.
Your Honor, may we approach?
Yes.
Then came the most curious exchanges of the day. Alan Jackson asked about January 30th, the day after John died. Phone records show that Jen McCabe made stops at her own house, O'Keefe's house, the scene at 34 Fairview, and the home of Canton Police Sergeant Michael Lenk. Jen never told anybody about the trip to Sergeant Michael Lenk's house until she was confronted with her phone records. And what did she do at Lenk's house? She sat outside in a car for 45 minutes with Carrie Roberts and Michael Lenk's wife. And when Alan Jackson asked if they ever considered going inside the house, Jen McCabe just shrugged it off. Now, I don't know about you, but sitting outside of a cop's house for nearly an hour the day after a police officer is found dead, it doesn't look good. And then came the big one. Alan Jackson drilled into the 7 phone calls that Jen McCabe made to John O'Keefe in the early morning hours of January 29th. 7. 7 calls, all of them missed. Jen said they were accidental, you know, just good old-fashioned butt dials. But Karen's defense lawyer wasn't buying it. He pointed out the obvious. If you butt dial someone who doesn't answer, it typically would go into their voicemail, and a long and silent but noisy voicemail would be left behind. But that didn't happen with Jen's 7 so-called butt dials. There were no voicemails left behind. And Alan Jackson pointed out that the only way you could make sure that a voicemail isn't left behind is to unlock the phone, place the call, and then somehow hit end before the voicemail kicks in. And by the way, do all of this with your butt. Multiple times.
I think I was going back and forth to the door. I was texting him. I think I put my phone in my pocket. I think I inadvertently maybe have called him.
What did you call it at the last hearing?
I believe I called it a butt dial.
And it's not just one butt dial, correct?
There could be multiple, yes.
7 butt dials in the course of 19 minutes, less than 20 minutes, correct?
That evening, I wasn't paying attention to butt dials or calls. I was going back and forth, listening to music, being with family. So if I inadvertently called his phone, I did.
Not inadvertently called him once. 7 times, correct? According to you.
According to the record.
I don't know. Talk about reasonable doubt. And then Alan Jackson shifted gears and went straight to the heart of the prosecution's case against his client, Karen Reed. That now infamous Google search. Hoss Long to Die in the Cold. That misspelled version of How Long to Die in the Cold. Jen said, again, that she Googled that phrase because Karen Reed asked her to, in the frantic chaos of the scene where John was found in the snow. But Alan Jackson wasn't letting go. He said, there's no audio, no video, no witnesses. It's your word and your word only, he said. And Jen agreed, saying, yes. Then came an even tougher question. Did you tell Carrie Roberts to lie to the grand jury when Carrie told the grand jury that she overheard Karen demanding that you make that internet search? Because Carrie already had to walk that testimony back last week. Alan Jackson clearly wanted jurors wondering, was Jen orchestrating a narrative right from the start? Next came dash cam footage that Jackson played. It was the video showing the moments after the first responders arrived at 34 Fairview. He pointed out that Jen McCabe, not Karen Reed and not Carrie Roberts, was the person who was speaking with police officers. He said, you seem to be engaging police while the others were otherwise occupied. And Jen, she didn't deny it. She said, I was trying to help. I was speaking with officers. Court broke for lunch around 1 p.m., but things picked up right where they left off when the trial resumed. Prosecutor Hank Brennan stood up for redirect and started filling in some of the gaps that the defense had opened up. He asked Jen how she felt when she found John in the snow, and her voice wavered a little bit as she said, I was shocked, confused, nervous, scared, anxious. All I wanted to do was get help for John as fast as I could. And she made clear she wasn't coached, that she was testifying from memory. She also doubled down on the hypothermia search, again saying she made that Google search at Karen Reed's request. The prosecutor Brennan did something clever. He started reading Jen's text messages to John, sent in real time as she allegedly was trying to figure out where John was. "Please answer. Karen is worried. We need to find you. Please answer so I know you're okay." These messages painted a very different picture from a cold and calculated theory that the defense had laid out. The prosecutor asked about her bond with Carrie Roberts. Was it forged out of grief or something more coordinated? And Jen didn't hesitate. "No," she said, "it wasn't collusion." After days of blistering cross-examination, dozens of texts, hours of questioning, and enough sidebar arguments to fill a law school class, Jen McCabe was done and off the stand. And the second she left the courtroom, Prosecutor Brennan had a clip of Karen Reed all queued up and ready to play for the jury.
"There was a woman who was a mother to kids that were close to John's kids, who lived very close to the Alberts. In fact, when Jen was navigating John to the Alberts when I was driving, she said, 'It's near Ashley's house.' Ashley and John were hooked up prior to John and I dating. Either he's hurt himself and is incapacitated, he could be passed out on someone's couch, which is just weird. We're not on a campus. Everyone lives in their own home with children. Or he's sleeping with someone. And there were multiple women in the neighborhood of Fairview that John had been with. And one of them, very recently, before I started dating John."
We'll backtrack later. Let's start with Fairview. So, who are you with?
I'm with Jen McCabe and Carrie Roberts, and Carrie Roberts' Ford Explorer. And I'm in the back, leaning over the front two seats. Carrie's driving and Jen's in the passenger seat. And I described this to everyone, so you've probably heard this before, but John looked like a buffalo on the prairie. It was just a lawn and a heap that... It wasn't a bush or a hydrant or a dog. It was a weird-shaped lump at that time in those elements. And I was looking to find him on the side of the road. I was expecting I'd find him. And the fear of what I was going to see is the worst feeling I've ever experienced. The anticipation of what is awaiting me was... as extreme a feeling, I wouldn't say it was as extreme a feeling as the grief of realizing what happened to him."
Next up, the prosecution called Hannah Knowles, a forensic scientist from the Massachusetts State Police Crime Lab. She walked the jury through blood alcohol testing and how it works. And after laying out the science, she also dropped a key number. Based on blood drawn at the Good Samaritan Hospital, she said Karen Reed's blood alcohol content could have been anywhere between 0.14 to 0.28 at the time that prosecutors believe she struck John O'Keefe. That's around 12:45 a.m. And can I just say, that blows way past the legal limit of 0.08. It's like double to triple the legal limit. After that, the assistant DA, Adam Lally, wrapped his questioning, and defense attorney David Yannetti stepped right in. He focused on the Massachusetts State Crime Lab, specifically how that crime lab is accredited and whether hospital labs follow the same strict procedures. And the forensic scientist had to admit that she couldn't speak to the standards that are used at the hospital where Reed's blood was drawn. And then, just before 3:40 p.m., Judge Beverly Cannone dismissed the jury for the weekend, letting them know they should expect full days in court all next week. So get ready. It's going to be another big week for Karen Reed, jam-packed with not many breaks. Last week, there were a lot. Not so much next week. And we're going to be back next week, too, with more from inside the courtroom. I'm Ashley Banfield. Thank you so much for listening. And remember, folks, the truth isn't just serious. It's drop-dead serious.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments. River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.